Lunchtime Live on News Talk.
Thanks to VideoDoc. See a GP online anytime for prescriptions and sick notes. Download the VideoDoc app. VideoDoc.ie.
This is Ciara and this is a Lunchtime Live podcast from News Talk. If you like what you hear, don't forget that you can subscribe via the app or on iTunes and make sure to check us out at newstalk.com/lunchtimelive. Thanks for listening.
Now, you're very welcome back. I don't know if you were watching over the bank holiday weekend or not, but It's Not Yet Dark by Simon Fitzmaurice was on TV3. And I have to say, it was on quite late. I was not intending to stay up and watch it. But it was so good and it was so profoundly moving and heartbreaking to watch. I couldn't turn it off and go to bed. And it was just about his story of living and has sadly subsequently died from motor neurone disease and the story of himself and his wife and how they dealt with it. And obviously we've heard a lot of conversation indeed on this show and elsewhere about the day-to-day struggles that carers faced when looking after a loved one. Obviously 24-hour dedication for a lot of people, their lives are devoted to caring for their wives and husbands and partners and all that. But what happens to the carer when that partner dies? What happens when that role is just pulled out from under you and the 24-hour a day caring just stops? How do you adjust to that life when it happens? And to join me now and to discuss this, I am joined by two people who have been in that position, who have been the carer, who have lost a loved one. In studio with me now is Tom Curran, who you may know cared for his partner Marie Fleming for many years before she sadly died in 2013 from MS. And many of you will be familiar with Tom from his work on the Right to Die campaign, and Annie McGuinness, who was a carer for her husband, Philip, who passed away back in September. Thank you both so much for speaking to me about what is a very personal subject, obviously, and one that I think you have no reason to talk about other than maybe to help other people who are going through it. So I really do value your contribution about talking about something so close to your hearts. Tom, I might come to you first of all. One of the things that got us talking about having this conversation today was I actually tweeted when I was watching It's Not Yet Dark and I said, oh my God, such a heartbreaking story. And you replied to me online and you said, but what happens afterwards? And, you know, when the person is gone and you don't have them to care for, what happens? What does happen afterwards? What are you left with when that you've lost your loved one, but you've lost your whole role?
Yeah, well, I suppose in my own situation, I was Mary's full-time carer for 20 years. So the level of care, I suppose, increased over the years. And it came on gradually, so I didn't realise that literally every minute of my day or night was taken up looking after her. And we enjoyed life together. There was no question, you know, about that. And at Mary's death, she was completely disabled. The only parts of her body that worked were her mouth and her eyes. And she could still talk, which was really lucky, as far as I was concerned, and I'm being selfish about it. But then Mary died in Christmas week. So Christmas came along, a Christmas of the grandchildren. She was buried just literally a couple of days before Christmas Day. And then she had a book published. She had agreed to the book being published, and it was due for publishing in February of that year. So all of the pre-publicity for that came along immediately in January. So I was wrapped up in all of that. And it was only, I suppose, after the book was published and things quietened down that I realised it. Now, there was nothing. Even the house, I had fought for years for help, for care in the house, and there were people coming in at various times, and I adjusted my life around their being there. But that all disappeared overnight as well. So the house just became a morgue.
So people literally coming and going, all stopped.
Yeah, I'm just complete. Even the dog was confused because he was used to having people around. So it was only then that it hit me that I was now on my own, and I didn't even know where to turn. Family were great, but that loneliness of being at home and lying beside, you know, in the bed that we shared together was devastating.
Yeah, no, I can only imagine. I don't know. Can I bring you in here, Annie, too? Annie, you were carer for your husband, Philip. He died quite recently, only this past September. That's not that long ago. Does Tom's sort of story there, does that resonate with you?
It's Absolutely and totally. You kind of said everything that I was going to say. It's just, I took a little while like him. I didn't have work like he had, but then all of a sudden you're there and you're no longer a carer, you're no longer a wife, you're in an empty house. And I do feel that, and unless you've been through it, you really can't understand it. You know what I mean? People can try and understand it, but it's heart-wrenching. It really is. It's appalling because people are beginning to understand what a life as a carer might be like, but they don't think that there's any life for a person after caring. They don't think that there's a problem, you know? Yeah.
Do some people even go further than that? Do some people even say, well, now you'll get your life back, or you'll get your, you know, you might get a bit of time for yourself kind of thing? Do people actually look at it in that way sometimes?
I think some people do. Most people will say, well, time will heal and you'll recover and all that sort of stuff. And as I mentioned in the article, I don't find that helpful at all. Mm. I prefer them to, unless they really want to know what I was thinking, I prefer them not to ask anything at all.
Really?
I don't know how Tom feels about that.
Yes, I agree completely, yes.
Do you find it hard to talk about it if somebody kind of blindsides you in the shops or whatever, Annie, and just says, how are you getting on or whatever? Is that hard to deal with?
It's very hard. It doesn't get easier now, I might add as well. You have to kind of, you know, most people don't want to hear you say, it's really hard, I'm having a hard time and all this sort of stuff. They don't want to hear that. So you just kind of say, I'm fine, you know, and move on to something else as fast as you can, really. That's what I do anyway.
Yeah. That's, dare I say it, Annie, very isolating. If the reality of what you're experiencing is one thing, which is that you're not having a good time, clearly, and why would you be? But when you have to kind of put that brave face on when people say, how are you getting on? And you have to kind of go, ah, yeah, sure, I'm grand. That's very isolating because your truth is not being expressed.
Absolutely. And I think it's, as I said, you have to kind of, there's a few people who know what you're talking about because they've been through it. But, you know, there's no way through it except knowing about it until you've been through it. And so in my case, I live in a very rural part of North Leitrim. I have no family here because they're all in Australia.
Yeah.
And we have only one child. He has a lovely family. And so I have to rely on friends, and they've been very good. But, you know, they don't want to be hearing about it over and over again because you have to keep talking about it.
Yeah, of course
you do. Do you find that, Tom?
Yes.
To talk about it.
Well, I suppose to a certain extent I got plenty of opportunity to talk about it because, particularly with Marty's book coming out, and also I continued, I suppose, the two things that were really passionate to Marty. One was her right to make a decision about her own death. And I continue that. And also the use of cannabis as a medicine, because it was the by far the best medicine that Mary had for the last 10 years of her life. So I continue those, but it means that I'm faced with it over and over again. Mm. I'm talking about it continually.
Can I ask you, Tom, a hard question? And I'm not trying to ambush you, but I think it's interesting because listening to both of you talking about, obviously you've lost your loved one, but it's clear that you've lost part of the reason you got up in the morning, your whole role 24/7 was caring. Would you advise other people who are carers and maybe are in the role that you have been in and are no longer in to keep some bit of themselves back for themselves so that after your loved one passes, you are not left with so little for yourself that you feel as lost as this?
I mean, that's a very easy thing to say. But, but as the caring role becomes more intense, bits of you disappear completely. You become you're personally lost. You don't exist anymore. You exist as the lover and the carer of the person who has the disability, and your life is gone. And then suddenly all of the things that you've put your life into disappear overnight. And it's very hard for other people to understand that. Other people are getting on with their lives, and everybody you look at on the street has a problem, has a story to tell. So you can't expect them to understand what you're going through.
But would you have thought it was in any way possible, or it would have been in any way better to try and keep a part of you for you?
But practically it's not possible.
No,
the time
possible.
Just isn't there.
Okay.
I mean, if we were getting more help from the state maybe and more help in the home, then maybe that would be possible. But even the skills that are needed to look after a person with a great disability like that, they have to be learned over time. And one of the things that I did when I finished was I designed a course for Family Carers Ireland on end-of-life care that's now been rolled out. I got funding to put it together because of the skills that I needed to look after Mary, and they weren't readily available.
Can I ask you specifically, Tom, because you're just over 4 years since you lost Mary, and obviously, Annie, you're only a few months. I mean, I'd say that the shock is still enormous. I mean, it's grief is a long road. But Tom, over time, over those 4 years, have you found it possible to slowly rebuild a bit, to kind of find Tom again? I'm sure it's a very hard and difficult road, but is it possible to you'll never be the same as you were before all this happened, but to rebuild a life for you that's full without Mary at the centre of it?
Well, I suppose because of the life that I've built involves Mary all the time. In as I say, with the two issues that I'm very much involved in, she'll always be there. But certainly, I'm getting on. I got back involved in amateur drama. I mean, I don't act. I make sets and I do sound. But I've got back involved with that with a wonderful group in Wicklow. And things like that come gradually. But the thing that I find is that even though it's nearly 4.5 years, every so often you just get this kick really where it hurts. And it could be a piece of music coming on.
Yeah.
It could be something that is said in something that you're watching on the telly, and suddenly the tears just flow.
Memory is a peculiar thing. Yeah, yeah. And you are quite you know, someone who's lost her husband very very recently. I don't want to upset you anyway, but are you struggling to try and find a sense of yourself in the immediate aftermath of being widowed and your husband having been so sick?
Absolutely. I'm still in the stages of not wanting to go out too much. I haven't got very much confidence. Like no more than Tom, though, that I anything can make me cry and just weep, really, you know, uncontrollably. But people know me now, and they just let me have it and get over it and then move on, you know. People walking down the street, older couple walking down the street hand in hand as a killer, all those sorts of things, listening, as you said, to the music, coming across a piece of Philip's glass, coming across his glasses, all those things are really, really difficult, difficult, you know. And I know it's going to take a long, long time. And as I said before, there's no quick way through grief. I'm afraid you just have to deal with it as it comes along. You know, I wish it would hurry up and go, but it won't.
Yeah, I remember after losing people myself thinking there's no way round this. You have to just go through it. No. You can't get under it or over it. You just have to go through it. If you were advising somebody or even yourself, Annie, what advice would you give somebody in your position?
I suppose a thing I would say was just allow yourself to grieve as long as you want. And whatever kind of grief you have and whatever form it takes, it's okay. I would say that to people. To me, that's the most, because grief is the most terrible, terrible thing. And, you know, there's no quick way through it.
No.
But also, I suppose we should mention the booklet too, The Way Ahead, the resource to support family carers that's been put out by the Care Alliance.
Yeah.
I found that an extremely, extremely good little booklet for people who are ex-carers, because it does go through the bereavement thing.
Yeah.
It goes through talks, videos from former carers and maybe how to fill the void and returning to work and health and wellbeing, all those areas, but not too prescriptive. And I think
that's from the Care Alliance.
Care Alliance and a whole lot of people got together only about 6 months ago, in fact, and put this together, because when Philip died, I couldn't find any resources immediately anyway to help me. So this was put together, and I think it's a fantastic little resource.
Okay,
that's my plug.
and if it helped, and there's going to be people listening out there who are in this position, because the truth of it is, everybody dies. And all of us will lose, you know, all the people we love, or else they'll lose us. If that's a given, Tom, why do we talk about it so little? When it's either you were always going to die or else Mary was going to die. One of you were going to go first.
Well, my fear was that I'd go first.
Yeah, I'm sure there was an enormous fear.
Oh, yes, yeah. And leave her without the care that she needed. But I think people are very reluctant to talk about it because they don't know what to say. They make small talk, or it's very easy to ask, how are you doing? Expecting you to say you're fine. But if you say you're not fine, you can see them back off because they just don't know how to handle it. But also there are even practical things that happen. I mean, one of them for me was that Mary's breathing was very bad in the last, I suppose, 6 months to a year of her life. So sleep was a difficulty. And she, because of her mobility was gone, she was asleep on her back, raised slightly. But I hadn't realised that I was constantly waking up, or maybe half waking up, and listening for that breath. Mm-hmm. And it became relatively frequent that I'd have to get up and take fluid off her lung because she hadn't got the strength to do it. And I didn't realise that this was happening. And then suddenly when she wasn't there and I'm trying to sleep, I would wake up at a start because there was no breath. And then I couldn't get back to sleep. So I was lying there awake in the dead of night, and then the grief really hit.
Yeah.
You know, it was then that you really miss the person that's supposed to be lying beside you.
It's a lonely place, the dead of night, isn't it?
Yes.
Yeah. Sorry, go on, Annie.
No, I was just going to say, another thing that we found extremely helpful, though it was very, very painful towards the end, was that Philip had organised an advanced care directive. And so the result was that he... didn't want any artificial nutrition, a peg, and it's in the end it was the swallowing that was the problem for him, and he refused to eat. So, but we knew what he wanted. We knew that he didn't want the peg feed, and I think there's not enough talk about advanced care directives.
Yeah.
Again, for the same reason you're saying, people don't want to talk about it.
Yeah. Okay.
You know?
Look, on that note, can I just thank both of you sincerely for talking about it? Well, because it's not an easy thing to talk about. And I think you're absolutely right. And the truth is, everybody dies, or else someone you love will die. This is life. There is no life without death. And it's kind of mad that when someone has just lost somebody and you go, how are you? And they go, oh, yeah, I'm fine. And we all go, oh, yeah, that's great. Because it's not true. And surely on some level, we all know that. But thank you so much sincerely both to Tom Curran for talking to me today, and to Annie McGuinness. And the booklet that you're talking about is from thecarealliance.ie, and you can download it. And obviously anything that helps people in that moment of loneliness and pain and fear and all that, I think is very important. Thank you both sincerely for talking to me.
You're welcome.
Thank you. Thanks again for listening to this Lunchtime Live podcast. Please do subscribe via the app or on iTunes, and check us out on newstalk.com/lunchtimelive. Talk to you again soon.